Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, we welcome author and business coach Nancy Gantikoffer to the podcast. Nancy provides guidance, leadership, and inspiration to business owners, helping them build the life and business they've always wanted. In this episode, we dive into her book, Respond with Confidence, The Business Owner's Blueprint for Handling Difficult Situations. And we discuss some key takeaways, like analyzing your emotions before responding, and why we should stop apologizing for everything. We also discuss how paying attention to opportunities that were presenting themselves to her helped Nancy truly hone in on her purpose, coaching. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge our sponsors, who help keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. I'm especially excited to announce the opening of their newest showroom in Mission Viejo and the upcoming grand opening of their showroom in the Laguna Design Center. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Sunset West, the design trade's premier resource for outdoor furnishings. Founded upon a family legacy of fine furnishings and a culture of excellence, the California-based company is dedicated to providing premium, casual furnishings and personalized service to the design trade. Each distinct collection is impeccably designed with quality and comfort in mind, and handcrafted in premium finishes and materials that bring life and style to the outdoors. With over 20 collections to choose from and a variety of materials and styles, along with hundreds of custom fabric and COM options, Sunset West is your design partner for stylish outdoor furnishings. Visit sunsetwestusa.com to view their entire line and to locate a showroom near you. And now, our conversation with author and business coach, Nancy Gantikoffer. So, Nancy, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Rick. This is the first time I'm here with you.
I know, right? It's amazing that it's taken this long.
I know. It's so funny. I love it, though.
Well, it's been a pleasure to learn more about you. And I tell you what, your book, Responding with Confidence, I mean, that really got my attention. It's a great read, and we're going to talk about that today here on the podcast for the listeners. But before we dig into that, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us about Nancy.
Oh, my goodness. All right, I'll try to do my speed talking. basically, I started out after college as a banker, did that for 10 years, raised to the level of first vice president, managed three departments of 150 people in total, and then started having babies and decided to leave the corporate world, like many of your listeners, I'm sure, have done in the past, and start to just raise my kids. So I did that for about 2 years, wandered the streets looking for other smart moms, staying at home, and I just didn't find a life that I wanted to lead in the stay-at-home mom circles and in the parks. So I decided to go back to work. So what I decided to do, I decided to become a personal fitness instructor. So I went back to college and became a personal fitness instructor. And I did that for 2 years, had a business, running a business successfully out of my home. I had a gym and I trained other mommies who had young kids. So it would take us a lot longer to work out, but we'd get it done eventually.
Oh, there you go. So you found your fit. You found your lane there.
Exactly, right? My niche. That's what I was looking for back then. And I also worked out of a gym, New York Sports and Fitness, for a couple of years. And then I got pregnant with my third. My pregnancies are never that good, so I ended up having to stop personal training, had my third child. He was born with a transposition of the great vessels, which is a heart anomaly that needed open heart surgery within 5 days of his birth in order for him to be able to survive. Wow. And that was a trying time in our lives. 2 years of quarantine for this kid, so I continue to be a stay-at-home mom to manage my three kids. And today he's 23 this week.
Yay.
Out of college, and he's healthy as can be, so it ended well, thank God.
Awesome.
I know, awesome. So after his quarantine, my mother, who was an artist, started selling, started saying to me, I'm giving away all my artwork. And I'm like, I just have too much. And I'm like, don't do that. Send it to me. In New York, she lived in Vegas at the time with my dad. And I started selling her artwork. Over 17 years of starting this little small art shop at home business, like, I'm going to come to your house. I'm going to sticky tack watercolors to your walls, invite your friends and family, and come and buy. I did that until one day an interior designer walked into one of my home art parties and said, that's a perfect piece of artwork for my client. Would you bring it to the house? I want to design a whole bathroom around it. And I'm like, okay. Brought it to the house. Can you help us frame it? I'm like, okay. I knew nothing about anything. I knew nothing about art besides my mother was an artist. I knew nothing about framing. I knew what's the difference between canvas and paper and glass and no glass. I knew nothing, Rick. Right? So I just said yes to everything and I went and I figured it out. Yeah. 17 years later, Expressive Living, Art, Framing, and Accessories was up and running, serving the New York tri-state area. I was an art consultant, and I worked with interior designers all over this area and grew that business by becoming a member of the Interior Design Society's Long Island, New York chapter.
Oh.
See, you got to find where your clients are hanging out, right?
Right.
So my clients were interior designers' clients because they appreciated the service of me carrying with my staff 500 pieces of artwork into a home, selected on premise, bring the framing, bringing the matting. So I became the vice president of the Long Island chapter of the IDS, then president, then national board member. I'm continuing to be an active member there. And it grew my business really fast. When I was about 50, I was going through a divorce and I thought, oh, this is like going to be tough. What am I going to do? I can't keep carrying heavy stuff around for a living. I'm going to get older, right? Right. So I realized that when you really start paying attention to what people come to you for, I realized that people were really coming to me for a lot of business advice. Mm. What do they do with their staff? How do they advertise? How do they get more clients? How do they speak to the client in a way that is going to give a successful interaction, make the sale, make the client happy? And because I was in the homes with them, I observed a lot of how interior designers interacted with their clients.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to watch. And then I quickly started having seminars for designers for accounting, social media marketing, client communication, hiring and firing. And I did that in my showroom, which was in my house. Mm-hmm. When that went so successfully and I was at this pivotal point in my life, I thought, you know what? It's time for me to become a business coach, which is what I always thought I should have been. Right. A coach, like a personal trainer, is a coach. I went back into coaching, hung my shingle as a coach to interior designers specifically in 6.5 years ago. And here we are today. I have 8,600 people in my Facebook group, the Interior Design Business Forum. I have 7 employees, and we have, I don't know how many clients at this point in my membership site, and then who coach with me. And I wish I would have done this when I was in my 20s.
Oh my gosh. I say that all the time. Everyone always asks me, I'm like, they're like, what's the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then? I'm like, I wish I knew that I could have done this 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Wouldn't it have been amazing how big we would have been by then and how many more people we would have been able to help?
The latter, more importantly, just the reach alone and how many more people we'd be able to have an impact on. That's what gets me so excited.
Yes.
So I love the way that you started off in art and then kind of
recognized, you know, who a core client could be, being interior designers. And then you spent time really kind of paying attention and absorbing information, seeing how designers did business. And because you're in the room, you're privy to the challenges and how they overcome them. And then really just kind of gathering that information in a vault and turning it into a resource for designers through your coaching business. I think that's amazing.
You know, I think that's one of the biggest issues I see in people is we make decisions in advance of where we want our lives to go, and you don't always pay attention to these little opportunities that might be presenting themselves and figuring out if that could be part of your future, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So when I really started paying attention, it was when I hired a coach. And it was like, what am I good at? What do people come to me for? What is my favorite thing to do? Help people, right? What gets me bored? Growing a business. And then I'm like, okay, now I want to grow another business. So guess what? I get to grow all of my 40 clients' businesses with them, right? I started really honing in on what do I like to do. Yeah. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make is they don't just really kind of get quiet and pay attention to what's giving them joy and what's going to support their lifestyle, and then being okay to take a leap of faith, fight through the fear. I always say walk through the fear and actually do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so much, I mean, the journey, it can be a little bit lonely. So when you have support around you, oh my gosh, it's so much better. So
definitely.
What prompted you to write the book, Respond with Confidence? What was missing out there that you felt, you know what, I'm just going to write a book about it? Did you get tired of having the same conversation with design clients? Were you saying the same things over and over? What prompted the book?
You know, it's kind of interesting. What prompted the book is I feel like I've had, it's not what you think. It's not what most people think. It's, I felt like I had a very interesting life and a lot of lessons to teach people related to raising kids, going through a divorce. I have my oldest is transgender, my youngest is gay, my middle is straight, and they all have their own paths. And the divorce I went through and how we're amicable still and raise our family together. Well, now the kids are older, so we don't have to do it together as much anymore, but we continue to do that. With my son having open heart surgery and my middle daughter having food allergies and just everything, I went, you know what? There's a lot of lessons for young moms, and there's a lot of lessons for parents who are also entrepreneurs. Like, how did I do it and manage all these? So that's what I thought I wanted to write the book about.
Uh-huh.
And when I hired a book coach, he asked me a question. Like, what do you want to write a book about? And I said, what I just said to you. And he went, yeah, nobody cares.
Oh.
And I went, oh, well, but, and I started telling a couple of stories about my kids and life. And he's like, that's a really good story. Write that down. That's a really good story. Write that down. He goes, we're going to pepper it into another book of what you actually can contribute to the world. What do people come to you for?
Oh.
And I'm like, well, they come to me for advice. And he's like, what kind of advice? I'm like, all kinds of advice. He said, over the next 2 weeks, take note of what most people are asking for your help with, friends, family, and clients. When I paid attention, Rick, it was all, the client said this, what do I say back? My employee is not, you know, calling in sick constantly, and I don't know what to say. How dare this client, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Friends calling me to say they have situations in their offices. How do they navigate these interpersonal relationships that are difficult? Then my son called me, my youngest, and said, I wrote an email to a professor and it didn't go over so well. Can you help me rewrite a response? So as the 2 weeks went on, I thought, you know what? Communication and responding confidently, non-emotionally, direct, concise, to get the result that you're looking for within that communication became so glaringly obvious that this is what everyone was asking me. And I was shocked because I never paid attention. Like I said in the beginning, right? Pay attention to what opportunities and what you're good at.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks later, I said, this is what people come to me for, help with communicating and resolving issues with staff, with clients, with family members. And he said, well, then that's what your book should be about. So give me one example of how you help somebody. So I told him the story of my son. He said, what did you tell him to do? I told him what I advised my son to do. And he said, well, how did you come up with that advice? And again, I went, I don't know. I just do. Yeah. Right? It's in here. It's in my head. Right.
Sure.
And he goes, over the next 2 weeks, I want you to start paying attention to the process your brain goes through when you're giving someone advice on communication. So I started to pay attention. Why did I tell him to do that? Why did I ask him that question? Why? And in the end, I realized it was because to get the result you want in a communication with another human being, I don't care where they are in your life, mm-hmm. you have to do certain steps and answer certain questions before you can get a really good response to them and a confident response. And that's where the book was really born, like respond with confidence. And we had the subtitle be The Business Owner's Blueprint to Handling Difficult Situations. And we peppered my life stories in there. So I still felt like I was accomplishing my goal of showing people that you can do it no matter what you're going through in your life.
Well, I think the book is great. And I think that the life stories are really important because it makes it very relatable to the reader. And here's the thing. I'm big on communication. I'm a big fan of critical conversations. Although they are difficult to have sometimes, I think they're so important and they're a normal part of life and business. So
yes.
I can see how probably one of the most common things that people were coming to you with was, hey, you know, like you said, how dare they this? Or I'm having a challenge with the client, or I'm having a challenge with the vendor. Things aren't working out. There's a breakdown. What could it be? Like, what is contributing to it? What I like about the book is that you make so many great points, many of which we kind of already know, but we don't pay attention to. And so there was just something about reading it from start to finish. It's an easy read, makes tons of sense, lots of great examples. And then all of a sudden it reshapes the way you communicate in general. I think it was really helpful to me.
I'm so glad. You know what? I will tell you the truth. Right before it was being published, I kept saying to the book coach, like, I'm terrified. It's too simple. The book's too simple. This is all stuff people should know already. And he goes, what's your favorite book? I'm like, business book? He's like, yeah. I'm like, simple, perfect day formula. He goes, simple. The perfect day formula is a book that I go back to over and over again every time my days get out of control. And I go, I know all this. I read it already, but it's good to have a reminder. And he said, that's what your book is for people with communication issues. Like, just a reminder, the things we all know, but we need to get back to simplifying it and get rid of the drama we feel sometimes when we're doing critical conversations, as you said, difficult ones.
Totally, totally. It's the basics. So I want to go over some of my top takeaways, and I want you to elaborate on them, starting with analyzing your emotions. So really just not shooting from the cuff, analyzing your emotions, knowing where you're at in the moment. Before responding, you reference a really fun story about Judy in the book right at the beginning. And I'm telling you, that's what hooked me. Share that conversation or share that story with the listeners and how it shaped kind of this method of analyzing emotions before responding.
Oh my God, Rick, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah,
I was sitting on my couch. Not on my couch. I had my little baby bear chair because I'm only 5'5", and I have this little chair on the side of my family. It was all on the couches. And we all were parallel playing on our computers with the TV in front of us. And I got an email from a client, an interior designer, who was looking for artwork for her own home. And she kept changing the parameters. First, it was, I don't even remember now, like horse pictures. So I provided a bunch of horse pictures. No, I don't really like them. Maybe da-da-da. And we just switched it again. Then it was like, well, that's too expensive. I wanted to spend less. She kept changing her mind, and I was getting frustrated. So one night, I had one sick kid. I'm trying to have family time, yet I'm working at night on my computer, which I'm sure a lot of people who are listening understand. And this email comes in for like the fourth time. She's changing her mind again. And at the time, we did not charge for our searching. So this is all free at this point. We're just searching and searching, hoping they buy something.
Right.
And now she's changing the parameters again. So I was frustrated. I hit forward, replied, boy, is she a pain in the you know what. She can't make up her mind, blah, blah, blah. Thinking I'm sending it to my assistant, but nope, I hit reply instead of forward. And when I hit send, I knew immediately, like, I don't know why I didn't know before I pressed send. I pressed send. I know it goes to her where it's basically telling her that she's a pain in the neck and that I'm so done with this. And I panicked. I jumped up, laptop, screaming at my young tweens at the time, take it back. Someone tell me how I can reverse this email. There's got to be a way. She's got a BlackBerry. She's going to read it right away. And there was no way to do that. So no. I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? I ran into a bathroom in my house, sat down on the toilet bowl with my pants on and the thing down and called her. And she's like, hi, how are you? She obviously hadn't read it yet.
Right.
She was driving and she said, I said, I just sent you an email and I just do me a favor and just delete it. Don't even read it. I was a little frustrated tonight. I had this and that going on at home. And she's like, no worries, Nancy. It happens. We all are real people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I never heard from her again.
Oh.
So here's the kicker, though. Literally a year ago, year and 2 months ago, maybe, I get hired to do a speaking gig local here on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
And I provided the 100 books for the attendees,
uh-huh.
all in their gift bags. And I walk in, and obviously I changed the name for the book, but I walk in, and there she is, right there.
Stop it.
Swear to God. And I was a speaker that day. They were all getting a copy of my book. She had no idea that she was the first story in the book. And I thought, oh my God, well, how am I going to handle this? So she came right up to me. Do you remember me? Da, da, da. I'm like, absolutely. Listen, there's something I have to tell you. And I told her, and I said, just so you know, that moment in time changed my life and made me much more aware of my communication and how careful I have to be and how being frustrated is not the moment, when you're frustrated, is not the moment to hit anything, forward, reply, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's step away from your computer and decompress. Because that moment, a lot goes on in all of our lives. We don't want to make fools out of ourselves the way I made a fool out of myself. You don't want to go through that.
We're taking a quick break to recognize another one of our partners who helps keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Design Manager, the Design Trade's most reliable project management, purchasing, and accounting platform. The business of design is complex and requires solutions developed specifically for our industry. Design Manager has invested decades responding to the needs of interior design professionals and continues to deliver innovative tools to manage your design business with efficiency and profitability in mind. Visit designmanager.com to start a free 30-day trial of the tool trusted by top interior design firms across the country.
I love that story. And you know what? It happens to all of us all the time. It's a very real part of life and business. And I also think it's perfectly okay to feel those emotions. You don't want to deprive yourself of those emotions. I mean, if that frustrates you or pisses you off in some way at the moment, go ahead and feel those emotions, but don't respond and certainly don't react. You know what I mean? I'm a strong believer in a 24-hour cooling off period. So just read it, think about it. You know how they say sleep on it if you can. But my God, give yourself a moment and step back before responding.
I think that everyone feels, even these days, even yesterday, I had a client who, an interior designer who's having difficulty with a client. And she's like, I'm wondering if you can get on with me today because I want to respond to her today.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, and why are you responding to her today? Why is that necessary?
Right.
Well, she's upset. I said, okay, so respond. Thank you for your email. I'm going to look this over and you'll have a response from me within the next 24 to 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me like, oh, like, yes,
yeah.
Let's take time to decompress. Let's take time to assess the situation and then figure out what do you want the end result to be? Do you want to fire this client because they are very difficult? Or do you want to save this relationship in order to continue on the job and see it through? And those are kind of those decisions are what I go through in the book. The first being decompress. You don't have to answer right away. Take the time to go for a walk. Call an advisor, call a friend. Realize most people are not evil, even if their email feels evil to you.
Yeah. And you know what, too? That allows the client time to cool off and take a step back or whatever the situation may be. I mean, I've had to deal with this so many times on so many levels. And, you know, builders would email me or leave a message saying this is going horribly wrong on the job site. It's all your fault because you didn't design right or it's not documented correctly in your documentation.
Right.
And you want to call up and say, hey, buddy, I'm looking at the same drawing as you are, and it's right here, like, open your eyes. But, you know, whenever we would wait and then respond later in the afternoon, they would usually say, oh, I figured it out. And by the way, that was like, you know, so six problems ago. That was so six fires ago this afternoon.
Absolutely. And you have to really start to distinguish. And I went through this with a client live yesterday. We shared screen. One of her clients' emails was just dripping with meanness and sarcasm. Mm. And I actually had my client, the designer, watch me decide what to respond to and what to ignore.
Yeah.
Because I ignore brain dumping and just venting.
Yeah.
I answer the questions that they ask. And I ignore the whole drama that some people like to put in their communication. So I had her watch me respond, and she's like, oh, so you wouldn't address that? Where she said, I really despise your system of how you order product. Okay, don't answer that. She's just venting. Exactly. Just ignore that sentence. And she's like, you can ignore those sentences? I'm like, that's what you should do.
Yeah, focus on the real issue at hand. You know, that exactly. That kind of leads me to my next big takeaway from the book, and that's knowing where they're coming from. So especially in a high-end market, it's difficult. But one of the things that I learned is that our clients were just ordinary people with extraordinary access to wealth. And trying to relate to that was difficult.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge for me, but over time I learned to really take myself out of the picture because it's not really about me, and try to get to be a little more empathic about where they're coming from. And just because what's a priority to them is not relatable to me doesn't make it not a priority to them, you know?
Correct.
So it's really about, I loved your concept of just knowing where your client is coming from and taking that into consideration when problem solving and communicating.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't make assumptions. So I one of the big sentences I say a lot is that the story you're telling yourself? Right? Right.
I love that.
Okay. Is that the story? In other words, they're pushing back on us so far because they're saying it's too much money. And these are people who go on vacation to Bali every year for 2 months and this and that. They have a great car in the driveway and this and that. I'm like, none of that matters. It's the story you're telling yourself that you think they should be able to afford this because, and that they're not valuing you. Mm-hmm. No, the story is probably completely different. And instead of telling yourself that story, like you just said, put yourself in their shoes for a moment. They may just not understand the value of certain pieces of furniture and how they're going to last you for 15, 20 years and you're balking over $500. Or they just need an education or an analogy. As an art consultant, I used to have them look at a piece of artwork and they're like, well, that's about, you know, $300 more than we really wanted to spend. And I'm like, okay, I totally get it. So do you go out to dinner and do you spend about $150 on a nice dinner sometimes with a bottle of wine, an appetizer? That dinner's gone in 24 or 48 hours.
Right.
And this piece of artwork, that now I'm going to go searching for another piece to replace it for that small difference amount of money, it's something you're going to have for 15, 20 years and possibly pass down. Yeah. And suddenly they look at you like, oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So trying to learn to be a better communicator, putting yourself in their shoes, seeing it from their perspective, and also analyzing your own process to see if you're educating them along the way.
Yeah. It's a two-way street.
Yeah, it's a two-way street. And not getting mad when a client just asks a question. They're allowed to ask questions. They're paying you money. They're allowed to question it without you getting all up in arms as, why am I being questioned? Like, they don't understand. Or maybe it's just a question.
Yeah, it's okay. They're allowed to ask questions. It's part of the process.
Exactly. So assessing their perspective, your perspective, what your process may have done to get them to that point of understanding, where what could you possibly do better with the next client? All that stuff comes in that assess section as to what's really going on here. What do you really need to tell them to make them feel better?
And it's also about really hearing them out all the way through, because I'm a big fan of being the last person in the room to speak, always letting the client finish whatever they're saying before speaking rather than interjecting. I don't know where I'd learned that lesson from. It was part of a leadership training years ago. And it works one-on-one with clients. It works in a group setting with yes. a team in an office, especially if you're leading the conversation or if you're in a management position. You know, always let everyone talk first. Always be the last person to speak. And that can be very difficult sometimes, but that's the only way you're going to gather all the information. And so in design, I would constantly find myself, especially during presentation time, when you show them something like that amazing sectional, and they begin to say, well, I'm not so sure. And then I would cut them off. It's like, no. Let them finish. Listen to why they're not so sure. Understand their priorities. Understand why they're saying what they're saying. And then respond. You still may not like it at the end of their statement.
Exactly.
But at least you have the full picture. Because more than once, I have interjected, and the client has said, if you let me finish my story...
Yes.
I was simply going to state X,
Y, and Z. And then what do they think of you?
But I'm still going to take the sectional. It's like, oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think that's a really good point. And that's what I observed a lot, that designers sometimes go off on tangents because they're waiting to talk mm-hmm. instead of just listening really to what the client is saying and then responding exactly to what the client is saying, not to what they were waiting to say.
Right. So true.
a wait to talker is someone who's very obviously chomping at the bit, almost move. I'm a body language trainer also, right? So they're moving forward. You could tell they're dying to say something. I want everyone who has a client like to do exactly what you just said that you do.
Yeah.
Sit back, take a deep breath, listen to what they're saying. And respond only to their concerns, not to what might be going on in your head about what you think the reason for their concern is. Just respond to what they're saying.
For sure. 100%. I used to get so caught up in the selling aspect of it because I always felt like I was never a great salesman. That was never really my zone of genius. But I tried. And, you know, I would always... There comes a time when it crosses over from selling to convincing. And I think that's when I got really frustrated with the process and knew yes. that there was more for me out there. You never want to be in a position where you're convincing someone of anything. And I used to go into these conversations anticipating that. And so yes. my advice to designers is to throw that idea out. Don't think about it like that. Learn from my lesson. It's not about convincing. It's really about informing and educating the client through the process.
Absolutely. If you're going in trying to sell, usually you will fail. Your best bet is as a designer, you're in charge of presenting, describing why you chose what you chose, and then relating it back to something they said they wanted or something that why you felt it would be perfect for their space. But if you're too good of a salesperson, you will have buyer's remorse over and over again. Like that person you were too good at selling to
yeah.
will then turn around and go, you know, I really don't like it that much. Can you take it back? And then it causes you all kinds of other problems.
Oh my God, that is such a good point.
Right? So too good of a salesperson causes you problems also. I can slam dunk anybody into anything, but if I do it too well, they want their money back 2 months later, and that's just not okay. So
yeah.
present based on what the client needs and wants, and stick to that rather than what you need and want. And most of the time, your sales will go smoother.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so true. That shortcut to close the sale that's always going to come back and bite you.
Yes.
So you had another point in the book that I kind of read this part twice about stop apologizing for everything.
Yes.
And I've always kind of thought that, but I've never articulated it, nor have I heard anyone articulate it quite like you. I think it's such an important chapter in the book that everyone should read. We need to stop apologizing for everything.
Rick, did you ever really look and listen purposely? Try it for 1 week. Listen to how many people say, I'm sorry, over everything, right? My daughter asked me for a glass of water. When you go to the kitchen, can you get me a glass of water? When I come back and I forget it, and then, Mom, did you forget the water? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, how about like, oh, I forgot that. Let me go get it now. Like, you just don't need the words, I'm sorry. If a client is upset over your price point, I can't tell you, everyone's, I'm sorry that you're upset. Why do you need to say that? Just say, I understand your concerns. Let me explain to you what we, you know, how we got to that number. Or mm-hmm. I understand your concerns. Let me explain to you how we're fixing it. Like, I have a staff of 7 or 8 people at this point, and when there is a mistake made, which is, you know, often people make mistakes.
Yeah.
We're people. Everyone's a person. I just say, no one's allowed to say they're sorry about a mistake. Unless you purposely tried to hurt me, then I expect an apology when you'll get caught. But otherwise, say, Nancy, this is what happened. This is how we fixed it. This is why it happened, and this is how it's never going to happen again. We put in, you know, our standard operating procedures now, or we lock them up better, or, you know, we added quality control. That's all I need, because when you say you're sorry on a mistake, it's almost like, well, just forgive me. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. Like, just, it's puts you also, I don't know how to explain it. I probably explained it better in the book, but it puts you in a subordinate position sometimes also with a client.
Oh, totally.
If you start to say you're sorry too often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? It puts you in a place of vulnerability for sure.
Exactly. And I want you to realize that, and not you in particular, everyone who's listening, you're a peer that has been hired for your unique talent of interior design. And the client is a peer. They do whatever they do best that makes them money. Yep. Right. So this is an exchange of energy. They get their energy from doing what they do best. You get your energy from what you do best. It's really the exchange of money, but you're on the same level, two people with different skills. When you start saying you're sorry over everything, you're now putting yourself in a position where they feel like they can take advantage of you. And honestly, Rick, it's not purposeful most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very subconscious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it shows a lack of confidence when you say you're sorry too often. It really shows a lack of confidence subconsciously and puts you in not the position of leading the job, leading your company, leading your family, leading your friendships. So it's something that I like everyone to pay attention to.
And that's what your clients don't want to hear apologies. They want to hear solutions. You know what I
Correct.
Mean? And you know, most clients get it. Like you said, it's not intentional. They have an expectation. They want some answers. And nice. I was speaking to another designer. I was just thinking, I'm pretty sure it was Josh Smith a couple of episodes ago. And he said that a client had acknowledged to him, you know what, Josh, you're in charge of everything, but in control of nothing. So I get it if that installation is going to be delayed by a week or two because something's still on a container somewhere or something needed to be rebuilt because it's custom and it didn't pass your quality control. Which I thought that was such an important statement, you know, because as designers,
I think you
we
should
are.
Say that sentence again. That was a really important sentence.
As designers, we are. We're in charge of everything, but we're in control of nothing. And I
Absolutely.
Think if you just approach the day that way, you're going to be so much better off.
It's true. It'll keep you calm because that's the reality.
Okay. Well, the time has come for our signature questions. Are you ready?
I think so.
So the first question is always, what would you say is your secret to survival in business? In general.
So when I was younger, I used to say I exercise every morning and I drink a glass of wine every night. Now I basically say I walk through the fear and I ignore the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I teach my clients to do. When you're the most scared about something you're trying to do and accomplish, that's usually when you're at the verge of your biggest breakthrough. So if you can just say, okay, fear, I hear you, I feel you, but I'm going to ignore you and I'm going to keep going. That's usually where you get the greatest bump up in your success.
Oh, I love that. Love that. And what would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then?
I wish I knew then that I was a good coach and I would have started my coaching business when I was in my 20s. Because that is what I do best. And interestingly enough, my mother, who's passed at this point, said to me, if you just stop talking, you'd be more successful in life. When I was a teenager, you'd get better grades, you this and that. And now before she passed. I'm like, guess what, Mom? I talk for a living. And she says, I know, I can't believe it.
So you were like me. Your report card always said talks too much in class.
Every single one. If she would just shut up, she'd get better grades. So the one thing I wish I knew then that I know now is that sometimes the thing that you're best at is not so good when you're a kid, but it could serve you really well as an adult. So encourage your kids and let them start early, unlike I did. I started so late.
And how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community? And I know there's probably 100 examples. We're doing it right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, doing podcasts that people can access for no charge. And my Facebook group, the Interior Design Business Forum, is 8,600 interior design professionals. My YouTube channel, my Instagram, all the same things a lot of us have. All this is free content for someone who is struggling to grow their business. Go watch the videos, but then act on the video. Find one thing that you're not doing and do it. And I feel like I give so much content to the community in general, and being a member of the Interior Design Society and giving back there. I just want everyone to realize you need to charge your worth, and you deserve to make money when you're running a business. Otherwise, why work so hard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate what you do, Nancy, and I appreciate you coming onto the podcast to talk more about it. I think that we've shared some really good tips and ideas and strategies for design business owners to be better communicators. So we appreciate you. The name of the book is Respond with Confidence, The Business Owner's Blueprint for Handling Difficult Situations. And how can we learn more about you, Nancy? How can we find you online and on Instagram? What's your handle?
Everything is my name, Nancy Ganzekoffer, and I know that's hard to spell, but I know you'll have it in the show notes, so it's very phonetic. Nancy Ganzekoffer on every platform, so you can find me there.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks a million. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick, for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, I loved so many things about this conversation with Nancy, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to share it with you all. I really appreciate how Nancy relies on practical advice and real life experiences to help inform and empower design professionals, actually all professionals. One of my favorite things about Nancy is her backstory, her career path, the diversity of her family, the book that almost wasn't. No one's journey is a straight path, and it's those twists and turns that truly shape your future and present to you who you truly are. Your purpose. My biggest takeaway from our conversation was her secret to survival. When you're the most scared about something, that is usually when you're on the verge of your biggest breakthrough. So don't let fear take control. Walk through the fear. Ignore it. Man, I really have to start printing t-shirts with these quotes on them. Thank you, Nancy, for sharing your story and such valuable tips and strategies for better communication and responding with confidence. Before we wrap up, just a quick reminder that we still have a few seats available for Design Biz Retreat this fall. Registration closes on September 30th, so if you're looking for an immersive 2-day learning experience for you and your business, head on over to our website and reserve your seat today. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.